You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, I have to go back to Friday because that jobs report was quite startling. I looked at the number and I thought, oh, what am I looking at here? But no, that was the amount of jobs outside of the agricultural sector that the US economy created. And obviously people like politicians seized on it and said, look how badly the economy is doing. But we mustn't forget there were two huge weather events and a strike, notably the Boeing's strike. So that affects it. And so I would imagine that there'll be a big bounce back next month. But certainly it got the markets going. And it'll be interesting to see how the Fed reacts this week.
I think they'll still reduce rates, regardless of what the jobs number was going to be. I still think they're on the path of reducing rates another 0.25% and then maybe one in December. I think that's what the economy needs. I think there's sufficient proof that things are not doing that well. When it's robust. You know, when I say not doing that well, I think perhaps for America, we must compare the U.S. with the rest of the world, which is not doing well. But U.S. is bumbling along and doing pretty decently. So, but I still think that they've got the margin to keep reducing rates. I don't think inflation is much of a problem as perhaps higher interest rates are. And I think it's something here as well, you know, which people keep asking me about, are rates going to come down? And I'm saying, look, I can't talk for the Reserve Bank. They've got their own approach to the, to monetary policy. They look at inflation, they make a whole lot of decisions. But what I do say, and you know, this applies to South Africa, with the prime rate at 11.5%, you can't survive because companies all borrow. They need to borrow, any small business. So I would imagine in the US as well that they need to get rates down to a level which encourages people to go into the housing market and to go into other markets as well. And they've got, Lindsay, they've got the margin to do so, you know, and they've got the support of the economy that people won't feel insecure about getting another job and therefore go out and spend. So I expect it to, you know, rates to keep coming down.
Yes, so of course they will. I think what a lot of people were speculating is after the 50 basis point cut last time, because of the jobs number, they might say, okay, another 50 basis points. But I don't think so, because I really believe that was a once-off 12,000 and it'll bounce back to 150,000, whatever it is, next month. So, yes, but it was interesting. And I imagine when you saw the number as well, you thought, goodness me, I haven't seen that lower number since the COVID crisis.
You know, we kind of underestimate the impact that those the weather events, as you call them, have had on the economy, certainly down in Florida. And first of all, if you've looked at Berkshire Hathaway's numbers came out, and in it they mentioned they're getting out of insuring housing. There's certain elements that they're getting out of, you know, because it's become so dangerous. Weather events have become so dangerous. And I was talking to someone in Florida who's a client of mine. He's been there for a few years. And what was interesting about it, you know, the amount of losses because they can't get cover. Mm. And he was in an area that has never been hit by the floods before, never been hit. It's outside of the range, whatever. But they got flooding, and suddenly they found themselves in positions where, yeah, they had to repair the house. They had to lay out for a whole lot of things uncovered, you know, and they're careful people. So it has had that impact. You know, in other words, it's had a very negative impact, and repairing the lines, repairing power lines and so on. So not all of it is fully covered by insurance, and it is a risk. It's becoming more of a risk.
Yeah, do you think these insurance companies sit down and say, okay, we've got our weather and natural disaster, act of God in insurance, but it's loss making, and the only way we can really recoup losses or maintain an equilibrium is to hike rates to such an extent that people say, no, you know what, I'll go without it. Thank you very much. Because that's the only way, David. You were talking about the beyond the normal area. When the biggest hurricane, and I can't remember the names of them now, there were two in quick succession, weren't there? Yeah. Whatever it was, one of them barreled in and you think, oh, it's going to hit Florida, but they're used to that. And that's, I say that glibly and rather casually, but it's the truth. But this went into five states. I saw this interview with this woman in a mountainous sort of area with pine trees and everything, and she was near a very small river. She was wiped out by this, and I thought, oh, that's nowhere near Florida. It's getting worse and worse. And as for Valencia in Spain, I don't know if you've seen the footage of what happened there. It's the most extraordinary thing you've ever seen in your life. There's footage of when the flood first came in, just completely destroyed everything in its path. And Europe is becoming more unstable as well. So
these are big events.
Yeah.
And by big events, I mean that we haven't factored into some of the insurance companies. And, you know, that they're re-looking at, especially in the reinsurance side of it.
Yes.
You know, this is, and the thing is, it's going to be, you know, for housing insurance in areas, coastal areas or anything like that, or in the hurricane belt, it's going to be very difficult. And it's also going to influence where you stay, you know. So, yeah. It's a lot of things happening. Factors like that. Sure.
You can't. Talking about where you live, David, you're absolutely right. You cannot live in an area that is at sort of river level. You can't live on a floodplain, for example. You can't have a house there because of the, even in my home country, Britain, you can't put a house near a river because the flood events are becoming more and more frequent. And you've got to find somewhere where, A, there's not going to be a landslide, B, there's not going to be a flood, C, the waves are not going to smash into your house. Where are you going to go? I don't know. You've got to find somewhere safe, which is on a relatively perched level, on firm ground. And that means that certain property prices are going to collapse and other prices are going to go through the roof. So the socioeconomic impact of this weather, these weather events are quite profound and will be so in the future.
Mm. And the other thing is that the builders are going to have to kind of relook at the way they build. Against us, you know, they've never factored this in. But Florida, I don't know, but you've got a brave person to live around there. And I've got a sister-in-law who lives down there, and you know, we were monitoring the storm. I was in the US at the time, and particularly, you know, worried about it because you have no idea what happens. I think they were without power for days, you know, 4 or 5 days, I think, before power was restored. And believe me, it's not South Africa. They work very hard to do that. I don't know that – I think they were lucky because the storm just sidestepped them slightly, but enough to create, you know, quite a lot of damage in the area. And this happens after – It's not a 1 in 10 year event, you know. It seems to be every year that this is hitting Florida, you know, that's hitting that area, and one after the other.
And there are more of them, and they come at different times, so they're not used to it. You can't. The meteorologists are all over the place. Anyway, we've got that. So don't be in the insurance or the reinsurance business. That is the message here from David Shapiro. We've got the election.
How did we get onto that one? I don't know. But anyway.
I don't know. Must have been you. David, you talk about the jobs numbers, and that's what you said. We don't understand how much they affect the economy. Well, you do, because everything closes down for a few weeks. Simple as that. And visitors don't come in. Now, David, the election, it's almost upon us. I've been tracking it every day for the last 3 months or so, and it's coming down to the wire, and it's becoming more and more bizarre. The extreme violence against women by Trump with his rhetoric this week, wanting to shoot Liz Cheney, suggesting that she'd be looking down the barrel and down nine barrels, as he put it, trained on her face, and he was specific about her face. And then he was talking yesterday about he wouldn't care if people shot at the fake news media, which is his lifeline, because he loves the limelight. But he said, I don't care if people shoot at them. I mean, you can't say that. How can you say that? This is totally, this is a rant, but with a very dark side, David.
Yeah, he's a dark man. And yet 50% of the population are likely to vote for him. And I think that's more worrying, that why would people choose a man like this to run their country? He's unstable. He promotes violence. He promotes division. He promotes everything that's negative. There's disunity. By disunity, I'm talking on a global scale. He's protectionist. In other words, he's anti-globalization. He wants to bring everything back to America and almost literally put a fence around them. And you wonder what America stands for. You know, you wonder how they've got into this position and who would vote like for a man like this. I find that the most disturbing factor, you know, whether he wins or whether he invokes his policies, his business policies or whatever. It's where is America? You know, what is this how they've always been and that we didn't know before? But what does it stand for? You know, I always remember growing up, and I used to curse my grandparents for turning left at Ireland and going to South Africa instead of continuing straight to the US. Because I think as youngsters, you know, we all wanted to be part of that American dream and live in America. I'm not quite sure I enjoy their sports, baseball, basketball, you know, but still, there was always something very appealing about the US. You wanted to live there. Now you're kind of revisiting that and saying, is this what the dream was? You know, what do these people stand for? And I find it particularly disturbing. I've got grandchildren growing up there. You know, I've got a daughter, a son-in-law, and a lot of friends there. And you begin to wonder, you know, when you go there, is this such a great dream? You know, I don't want an America that's promoting violence and promoting all this hate.
Well, racial division as well, hatred towards women.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a long list of things that should be telling people not to vote for Donald Trump. And yet, it's almost as though he's numbed us into submission. And because he says it so often, it's not impactful anymore. If he was I think I said this to you before, but I'll say it again. If he was a stable fellow with reasonable speeches and reasonable policies, and then suddenly he said, I'd like to shoot Liz Cheney or whatever, then you say, oh, wait a second, what's going on here? But he says it every day. He says it literally every day. I sit there with my mouth open and say, how could he have? I thought yesterday that he'd hit rock bottom. And today I'm looking at the screen and I say, no, I was wrong. He keeps on plumbing new depths.
Yes.
It's incredible.
What worries me is, you know, they've spoken about, and I don't think this is going to happen, you know, they've spoken about Jamie Dimon becoming Secretary of the Treasury. And I'm saying, hold on a sec, Jamie, you're really going to accept it? You know, I know his wife, Judy, now has come out and, to quote, has been knocking on the door for Kamala. In other words, promoting Kamala, because Jamie Dimon hasn't said anything. But, I mean, I'm talking about people like that. You know, if he had to invite you to join his cabinet, would you do it? Would you want to work for a man who, from one day to the next, changes his mind? You know, who do you really want to be associated? Because what we're finding now is that everybody who was in his cabinet from 2016 to 2020, you know, have turned against him and are revealing the most horrific stories about the man. Mm. So I'm not sure everybody's going to put their hand up and say, you know, please include me, you know.
I watched a video again of him. He's very, very awkward. His body twitches. His body language is really weird.
Yeah.
And the way he jumps up and down and everything, he's seriously, I mean, I'm sure he's got great ideas and everything, and he's built this massive empire. On paper, anyway, but he looks so very, very peculiar. And, yeah. and his twitching and his eye movements and everything. There's something wrong there. I mean, there's a fine line between genius and madness. And I think he's shifting towards
probably
the
autistic,
latter.
Probably autistic, yeah.
Maybe. David, one thing where I think Harrison Walt's campaign has missed a trick is with on the economy. Now, every single poll that I see says that people's approval rating of Trump is way higher than Harris's when it comes to the economy. But I think she should have attacked him more on that because, first of all, he says, as soon as I get in, I'm going to cut energy prices by 50%. How are you going to do that? Are you going to go to the energy exchanges, the international futures exchanges, and tell people, wait a second, you've got to sell now so the price comes down? Are you going to go to and force natural gas producers to produce more so the price of gas comes down? What on earth are you talking about? Inflation is going to come right down. The only way it comes down is if the US Federal Reserve brings it down. What are you talking about? That's the first thing. Sorry, go on, and then I'll tell you my
point. Go on.
I want you to read, you're an avid reader. I want you to read a book called Lucky Loser. Now, because everyone says, well, it's great to have a businessman in the White House. Well, it's great to have a businessman in the White House, but he's a failed businessman. He said, and this is one of his first and biggest lies, that he was only given $1 million by his father, Fred, and he turned it into $10 billion. Not true. He was given nearly $500 million, and he turned it into, at the moment, if you take out Truth Social, which is a very recent paper profit of around $4 billion at the moment, he's worth about $2 to $2.5 billion, and his liabilities are piling up all the time. He's done is turned over goodness knows how many decades. He's turned 400-odd million into $2 billion. If this book points out, he'd have just kept the assets that he'd been given by Fred Trump, just collected the rents and stayed at home and played golf and eaten KFC and Burger King every day and been attended to by a team of mental health professionals. He'd be worth $80 billion now. And if he'd have put his money into an S&P 500 mutual fund tracker, he would be worth even more. But he didn't. He fiddled. It takes a very successful, a very, very special man to bankrupt an airline, to launch a range of steaks which didn't sell, a water company, a university, and the list goes on. But the greatest talent that he's got is bankrupting casinos. There's no way that anyone with half a brain could lose when they have a casino. But Trump did, and it wasn't just one casino either. Everything he touches turns to rubbish.
People
think he's a successful businessman. It's a myth.
I think, and he made most of the money, I think, was made as a TV star. I think if you, you know, he's, they've broken down his empire. I mean, and that caused, Tepps have gone to jail for it. And I think the way that he ran it has caused, you know, a huge number of cases against the people that worked for him. But he's oblivious to this, and so is everybody. It just brushes off him. I mean, it's, but what you're saying is absolutely right. There's actually a much broader message in that as well, you know, for people who think that, you know, the people who inherit fortunes and always believe that they want to try and emulate their fathers and do more with it and end up losing it. But you're dead right. He has been a failed businessman, but he doesn't believe it, you know, and he's got the ability to talk his way out of it and surround himself with people who continue to push that message. You know, it's quite remarkable. He's not a great dealer. You know, what did he do? He wrote that book, The Art of the Deal, or something.
Well, he didn't write it, actually. It was ghostwritten. It was ghostwritten on his behalf. He thinks he couldn't write a shopping list. Come on now. He hasn't got the concentration for that. So he didn't write it. But anyway, that was quite successful and people loved it. And that's what you got when you went enrolled in the Trump University. You got a page of notes and a copy, signed copy of The Art of the Deal.
It's quite remarkable and it's quite scary. And the last thing you want to do is to have a businessman in the White House. You know, they've never proved. You remember when even Bloomberg who was a very successful mayor of New York City, when he tried to stand for the last election. I mean, he was a total flop. He lasted no more than, I think, a couple of weeks and then said no. You know, he just never had the personality, no matter that he's built up an incredible business in Bloomberg. But politicians are just a special type of person. You know, if I can you imagine meeting Trump? And the one thing that I would avoid at all costs, in fact, to anybody like Trump, you know, you just stay away. Stay away because you're not going to come out on the right side of a person like that. Meaning in dealing in business, it's you've got to be very careful about the people that you decide to do business with, or even to partner. That's what I'm saying. You know what I'm getting at is when it comes to his cabinet, do you really want to associate yourself with a person like that? Got to be crazy. You know, bless Kamala, she's not the brightest star in the sky, but I mean, she knows what she has to do. And, you know, Reagan was like that as well. She'll surround herself and she'll listen to people.
She's got to delegate, you see. She's inexperienced. Yeah. She's been a prosecutor in California, San Francisco specifically. And she's very, very inexperienced on the world stage and when it comes to domestic policy. But she will have a sense to put people around her that are not just sycophants and won't say, yes, Mrs. Harris, no, Mrs. Harris, Ms. Harris. She'll invite ideas and she'll do well and she'll grow into the job. That's what I think.
You know, the other point I wanted to make, that's the one earlier on, where Trump reckons, you know, he's got the policies of bringing manufacturing back to America by increasing tariffs so that people are forced to open their factories. How long does it take?
Exactly.
You can't just build a factory. You know, it takes years, number one, to decide where it's going to be, to get the plans written, to get, you know, everything, the infrastructure around it. It doesn't happen. It takes years. So by the time the first factory, you know, you put up tariffs and then someone says, okay, I'm going to follow his example. I'm going to build a factory. 4 years before it comes in. It's the other thing is that, you know, we're going to just pump. You just go and now drill holes. You know, you reckon, oh, yes, he's given us permission. We're just going to drill and oil's going to come gushing. It also takes ages. You know, a lot of these are being closed up. I mean, it's just crazy. You know, these things take, and that's why I'm saying that I think his economic policies or industrial are just more bluster than anything else. I think he's got no idea of supply chains, of what it takes to actually run a factory and you know, or to run an operation, especially in a high-tech industry. You know, these things are not at your doorstep. You can't just suddenly decide, yes, we're going to have these high-tech industries, you know, growing in America. It's just, so I don't know, with tariffs, the people who are going to suffer are the consumers. You know, if he does impose certain tariffs, consumers are going to be hammered. They're going to have less money in their pockets to spend. It's just,
And the stock market will fall drastically.
Yes, of course.
Okay, we
can get frustrated. We can get angry. And we just say, please, American voters, you know, just, yeah. I must tell you a story is that I was running on the weekend and I came across a chap. He's a very sweet, lovely man. He was, you know, he was telling me that, that Trump has been there by divine providence, you know. So, okay, I'm not going to argue with that.
Oh, yeah, he was put there by God, yeah. He was put there by God. Very, very God plausible.
I said, well, I can't argue against that, you know, because I haven't got any direct line to above. You know, I just so, anyway, there you are.
Treading on thin ice now, David, with me when you come to that sort of crap.
No, but I'm saying that I can't argue with that.
No, that's really good news. Okay, what else have we got? Anything happening in markets? The results season, we were talking about it with Viv on Thursday. There's probably been a couple more since we last spoke, but it's generally been fine, hasn't it?
That's doing well. I'm into the argument now because, Lindsay, I'm not an analyst in the true sense of a CFA, you know, three, whatever it is. I'm just a good old accountant. And I mean, even then, I'm not even using my accounts four. I'm just applying accounts one. And what that means is I look at the top line. I say, what's the revenue? What is the cost of the goods they sold? What is their operating profit, you know, trading profit down to costs and operating profit? How much money have they got at the end? And when I apply that to a lot of the tech companies or companies coming out, there's a pretty good picture that emerges. And, you know, meaning that you've got the Amazons and Apples, and you name the businesses. I know that Apple's disappointed, but they still generate an enormous amount of profit and an enormous amount of cash, you know, on an absolute basis, which stays within the company, goes into reinvesting, and forms a basis, a continually growing, or what we like to say, compounding base, you know, because the money you've got, you can keep compounding if you're doing, you know, applying it into your business. You know, it might be at slightly smaller margins, might be at slightly higher. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? These it's like blowing air into a balloon. Sometimes you've only got one puff. Sometimes the puff is bigger than the other. So when I look at it, I'm saying, hold on a sec. There's no reason for me to get out of this business. You know, everyone's talking about rotation. You know, you've got to get into rotation into some of the value type stocks. I'm saying, well, show them to me. Exactly. Why? You know, show them to me. You know, which value? What is value, and what are these values kind of growing at? So I'm still stuck where I am. I'm saying there's no reason for me to get rid of these businesses, even though they've come under quite a bit of criticism for missing, or that they're not monetizing AI or at the moment. I said, give them a chance. They can afford it. You know what I mean? They don't have to borrow to take that risk because they've got the money and they've got the people. So to come back to a point, I'm not ready to do anything different at this stage. I'm still backing these businesses as their multiples start to reduce because they're making more profit and the market's not rewarding them for that, you know, at the same pace as it used to. So, yeah, I'm sticking to my same formula.
Okay. Arsenal lost again, David.
They're terrible.
Well, that's an exaggeration, but they were very lackluster. They were very disappointing.
They're terrible, man. You know what? It was like that pivotal moment in my life, kind of where you watch and you say, you know what? They're not going to come close to it. They're not ready. They haven't got the team. Without Odegaard, you know, pressing them on and pushing them, they haven't got it within themselves. And it's a sad admission to say that, but you know, you come to that point. And as did you see Patrick Evra's remark?
No.
Patrick Evra said they like Netflix, always waiting for the next season.
That's not bad. Yes, very good. he hasn't won anything, David. Really, has he won something? No, he hasn't won anything. You know my views on Mikel Arteta.
He's
a talented chap, but he just hasn't got that final oomph. You know, to motivate the players. At least they didn't get anyone sent off this time, which is a remarkable achievement.
But they haven't got that edge. You know, I was watching Onana from Aston Villa. You know, he's a big man. He didn't stop running and pushing the whole game. They got whacked, but but still, I loved his attitude. You know what I mean? This big man running up and down, never resting, just pushing his way, beating up people. I said, hell, you know, we could do with that. I know Rice tries to do it and so on, but for Arsenal. But, you know, I love those kind of players who just keep going, pushing, trying their best. Arsenal just... they looked flat, you know. I don't know. Anyway,
we got Champions League this week, so maybe they were saving themselves for Champions League.
They got Champions League and they got Chelsea next week, you know, all in one week. Say, okay, yeah, that's what you are like an Arsenal man, you know. All right, just
Well, the consolation is that City lost as well. The downside is that Liverpool won, so Liverpool now. Looking good, but City also looked as though they looked tired. They looked devoid of ideas and tired. Even Pep, who's normally jumping up and down, he just sat slumped in his chair, scratching his chin.
They are tired. They're tired of travelling around the country, you know, never at home. because during the week they've got to go out. I think it's just too many games now, and the injuries. Mm. Just you know how many injuries you saw on the especially yesterday's game, say. Lots. And these chaps don't recover fast, because if you push them to recovery, it just, you know, exacerbates it. It means, you know, if you've got a limp or something, then your hamstring on the other leg is going to go, or something else is going to go. You know, if your body's not fully balanced. So, I don't know.
Yeah, they're being taken advantage of. The clubs and the players by association are being taken advantage of by the Football Association, UEFA, and FIFA as well. They're saying, this is a money-making machine. Let's keep them going, see how much they can take. And it was Rodri, who's now out for the season, and he said this before, Manchester City's Rodri, before he got injured, he said, we are thinking of going on strike because of the number of games. We can't take it anymore. We get paid very well and we love our jobs, but you can't play three games in eight days all the time, all season. No.
And it's hard games. It's not like you're going there and playing against, that they're easy, that you can just run around and not focus. These are all difficult games. So I understand. You can start to see it in the players themselves. They just can't keep up that pace. And remember, they just came off the European Championship, so they never really had time to recover.
Okay. Anyway, well, there's compensation at the end of the week when they get the £150,000 in their account. But yes, it doesn't. Something has to be done. David, thank you very much for your time, as always. Okay. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities. Next time we speak, we will have a chance to. Well, just say, well, he's back. Hopefully not.
David Shapiro. You'll find me on the top of the Alps. Yeah,
exactly. As I said, David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.